1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump has announced a plan to make IVF more accessible.
For the first time ever, we will make it legal for companies to offer supplemental insurance plans specifically for fertility. That's never been done before.
Earlier, President Trump spoke with Russia's president, press secretary Caroline Levitt.
The president and President Putin discussed meeting together in Budapest, and President Trump will talk about that opportunity with President Zelensky when he's here at the White House tomorrow.
A judge says federal immigration officers in Chicago will be required to wear body cameras after run-ins with protesters. Illinois Governor Pritzker continued to criticize the president's use of federal agents.
Chaos, confusion, and destabilization are the means. Eroding our democratic institutions is his end goal.
A digital rights group has filed suit against the Trump administration over alleged social media monitoring of people in the U.S. legally. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammy McCormick.
For WXCO News, I'm Isabella Nieto. As the climate shifts, so does the science behind growing cranberries. Melissa Kay reports.
Staff at the Wisconsin Cranberry Research Station are working to ensure the future of the state's signature fruit by studying how cranberries can tolerate extreme temperatures and finding ways to extend the harvest season to reduce labor and equipment demands.
The inability to change in a changing environment is the textbook definition of extinction.
That's Grant Hawley, the executive director of the nonprofit Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association. He said Wisconsin growers know what to do when change happens slowly.
When you're looking at fast changes, you need to know the whys. And that's where our researchers come into play.
They're able to look at changes happening at a molecular level and see how the cranberries are being affected and also the symbiotic relationship the plants have with other organisms in the ground.
They're seeing how that bacteria inside of the soil is helping with nitrogen uptake. They're making sure that the fungus in the ground is helping us with water uptake.
Gabby Myers is the Research and Education Manager for the Wisconsin Cranberry Research and Education Foundation. She coordinates efforts from researchers across the state.
They're trying to create better cranberries, so maybe they're sweeter, firmer. So all different sorts of traits that they're trying to breed for, we provide a space for them to have those plots established.
Hybrid cranberry varieties are helping farmers diversify their marshes, producing more fruit on less land, and spreading out the harvest season.
They're trying to be able to make it to where harvest doesn't all happen in the same 2 weeks, because that's where you need extra equipment, you need extra people. It's just a terrible time if you have to do that.
Harvest season now starts as early as September and can run through October or later, depending on the year.
Now a singular family can actually start handling a medium to small size farm.
I'm Isabella Nieto for WXCO News.
Game three for the Brewers and Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers and Dodgers battling to advance to the World Series next week, continuing tonight in Los Angeles. Second baseman Bryce Terang on Milwaukee being down 2-0.
We know where we're at, and we know what we got to do, and I trust these guys in the locker room to figure it out, and we got a good group of guys, and we've fought all year, so I think heading to L.A., I mean, we know what we got to do.
How tough have the Dodgers pitchers been? The Brewers, Jake Bowers.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are dialed in right now. Seems like you can go an entire game without seeing a pitch over the heart of the plate, so obviously it's tough, but that being said, we got to take it upon ourselves to try and do something to disrupt their timing and get them a little bit more uncomfortable on the mound.
Football, the Wisconsin Badgers are 2-4, and it doesn't get any easier. They host Ohio State, the number one ranked team in the nation, kickoff at 2:30 Saturday in Madison. The Packers are in Arizona on Sunday against the Cardinals at 3:25. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
98.9 WXCO, Wausau's real news and great conversation.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and isolated shower or two tonight with lows in the mid-50s. Partly sunny tomorrow, a stray storm could pop up, highs in the low 70s. Temperatures start to fall back for this weekend as we dry out. It's 55 right now.
On Friday night, the Wausau West High School football team wraps up the regular season, traveling to River Falls to take on the 7-1 Wildcats. Hear all the action live from the Clover Belt Credit Union broadcast booth, starting with the pregame show at 6:35 p.m. and the opening kickoff at 7 on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Wausau West football on 98.9 WXCO is brought to you by Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, Wisconsin Valley Flag Football, Featherstone Cabinetry, the Wausau West Gridiron Club, K5 Construction, Rocket Industrial, and the Clover Belt Credit Union. It's Wausau West at River Falls in high school football. Live from the Clover Belt Credit Union broadcast booth, Friday night, starting with the pregame show at 6:35, kickoff at 7 on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, Milwaukee actress and filmmaker Kara Mulrooney makes the popcorn pick of the week. Then Dan Hess of Old World Wisconsin joins me to discuss a big upcoming event. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Allball Show.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Thursday afternoon. I am your host, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is shutdown day 16, and let's remind ourselves yet again who's responsible here.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, when they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate, who's running things in Washington. So I really think the pressure is on the president.
Yep, the pressure's on the president. That is who is responsible here. Some shutdown updates to start our Thursday afternoon. Senate Democrats have blocked an $852 billion defense appropriations bill in a 50-44 vote on Thursday. This just highlights the divisions and the fact that the MAGAs don't seem to want to be negotiating over much of anything. Don't worry, the Department of Defense is not running out of money anytime soon. This was largely symbolic. The vote will come up again and will absolutely pass once the government is funded again. But what I thought was interesting about this was the fact that, of course, Senate leader Republican John Thune said this is Democrats, you know, throwing national security under the bus. Again, that's garbage. But importantly today, yet another funding measure failed in the Senate by a 51-45 vote. Republicans, again, failing to pick up any additional Democrats, not getting anywhere closer to the 60-vote threshold that they need to hit. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Thune hadn't presented a proposal for any kind of vote on extending these ACA credit subsidies that we've been talking about, the tax credit or subsidies that we've been talking about for weeks on end. Although, and here's the important part, Majority Leader Thune had promised Minority Leader Schumer that he would put together such a proposal for a vote on extending the credits in the Senate. So Thune says he's going to do something, fails to do it. Chuck Schumer and the Democrats call him out and say, hey, you got to do better here. We actually have to see a couple of proposals. There needs to actually be a negotiation instead of Republicans trying to basically bully Democrats into agreeing to strip health care from some 15 million Americans. This is stupid. Let's be clear. And House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries gave a few remarks this afternoon, speaking to the unity that Democrats have on this issue surrounding the shutdown and the stand that Democrats are taking over this one point, that Republicans, despite the fact that the big, brutal bill stripped away the ACA subsidies, Democrats are standing pat, that in order to get the government open again, Republicans are just going to have to do the gosh darn right thing. Take a listen to House Minority Leader Jeffries today.
From the very beginning of this crisis, Senate Democrats and House Democrats have made clear we are fighting to address the health care crisis that Republicans have created, the largest cut to Medicaid in American history as part of the Republican One Big Ugly Bill that hurts everyday Americans in order to benefit their billionaire donors with massive tax breaks. Hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing all across America because of Republican policies. That's hurting everyday Americans. Their refusal to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits is going to result in tens of millions of people in Republican-held states, Democratic states, purple states, all across the country. It doesn't matter. Tens of millions of people are going to experience dramatically increased premiums, co-pays, and deductibles. It's going to make healthcare unaffordable for people. They will be unable to see their doctor or take their children to see a doctor when they need one. That's not acceptable in this country. This is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. So Democrats are standing up to address the cost of living crisis that Republican policies like the Trump tariffs have made worse. And we're standing up in defense of the health care of the American people.
Amen, Hakeem. Now, just a note, I may get to this a little later in the show. But what I found really interesting about this is that the racist memes and posts attacking Leader Jeffries, as well as the anti-Semitic posts attacking Minority Leader Schumer, have reached a fever pitch on social media. You would think after all of that faux outrage over rhetoric, you know, and incendiary language, that maybe Republicans and their supporters would tone down the bigotry and racism. Nope, not happening. Closer to home here in the state of Wisconsin, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Wickler, has announced he won't run for governor. He was an incredibly essential piece of what I think has been a fairly strong recent track record from Democrats in the state of Wisconsin of winning the statewide elections. He was an incredible fundraiser to do that. But I think what Ben had to say, he was quoted in today's Journal Sentinel about what Democrats need to do going into 2026, is really the headline here. And it echoes many of the points I have been trying to make on this program over and over again. It echoes the discussion that I had yesterday with two professors in the 5 o'clock hour. If you missed that, you can find it at civicmedia.us/shows on Apple Pods or Spotify. Here's what former Wisconsin Dem Chair Wickler said. Democrats need to focus on showing Democrats should focus on showing voters how they can bring this state together in a time of bitter and intense division and actually make government work for everybody. Democrats need to build a defense for democracy and be clear about which of their candidates can actually win in general elections. Ha ha! That part right there. Democrats need to stop the litmus testing, stop the ideological purity tests. We cannot be defined in the public forum, and yes, I am a Democrat. We cannot be defined in the public forum by the tail ends of our bell curve. You know, those at the most extreme ends of the Democratic Party. That won't work for us. We've got to build a broad-reaching, broadly effective message focused on the economic needs of regular Wisconsinites and Americans writ large. And we need candidates that can win in the general election. I don't want to see yet another candidate who has only ever run in a royal blue legislative district. To me, you have not shown the ability to unify, to speak across the aisle, and to bring people of both parties together. We need practical, we need common sense, we need authentic, and we need solutions. I certainly hope that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, under their new chair, heeds Mr. Wickler's warnings about 2026. I'll also call him my warnings, but hey, he's the one with the fancy job title. In other local news, the Milwaukee County Mitchell International Airport, the Dane County Regional Airport, and the Green Bay Austin Straubel International Airport have all said they're not going to be showing this propaganda piece from Kristi Noem. If you haven't seen the video, it's kind of like a weird talking version of a glamour shot. You remember those that they used to have in malls and people would go to get like boudoir shots for their partners, or maybe, you know, you'd go for like your senior picture or something and your hair would be all big and flowy and the makeup's, you know, huge and looks very CoverGirl-ish. Well, Ice Barbie in these videos looks a little bit like it was glamour shot day at the Department of Homeland Security. Let's take a listen to this ridiculous. And remember how we started the show today and how we're going to start the show every day until the shutdown ends. Donald Trump is responsible for this shutdown, but listen to Noem and what she wants airports across this country blasting into Americans' ears.
Hi, I'm Kristi Noem, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. It is TSA's top priority to make sure that you have the most pleasant and efficient airport experience as possible while we keep you safe. However, Democrats in Congress refuse to fund the federal government, and because of this, many of our operations are impacted, and most of our TSA employees are working without pay. We will continue to do all that we can to avoid delays that will impact your travel. And our hope is that Democrats will soon recognize the importance of opening the government.
Wah, wah, wah. What we realize is the importance of accessible, good quality, and affordable health care. We can at least start with the affordable part-ish, sort of, and try to work on the accessible and high quality. But, you know, that requires cooperation or at least good faith negotiations with the other party. By the way, all of this is, of course, illegal. The Hatch Act prohibits using government equipment or official government channels for partisan political activity. There's literally a law that says she can't do this. And they're doing it anyway, continuing Donald Trump snubbing his nose at law and order and embracing in a big old bear hug utter and complete lawlessness. You know, kind of acting like someone who is accountable to no one, is blessed by the hand of God. Oh yeah, like a king. Like a king. Speaking of kings, I'm super excited because today at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by Liam Kent of the Blue Anchor Project, one of the national partners of the No Kings Day activist protests, whatever you want to call them, rallies. I'm going to call them rallies that are going to be happening all across this fine country of ours on Saturday. In case you missed a little tidbit I dropped, I think about a week ago, yours truly, yes, me, Maggie Dawn, had been asked to MC the No Kings rally here in Milwaukee at Cathedral Square. I got promoted, y'all. I am now going to be the speaker on the rule of law, trying to share some of the most basic values that conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, independents, liberals, progressives, and folks that don't really give a whit about politics should all agree about. That there is no man above the law in this country, that we don't have kings, that no political leader has been chosen by God, but that we are ruled and governed not by one man's whims, but by a system of laws. That is what we have all signed up for as Americans, that's what democracy means. And I'll be speaking about how each of us can protect that value and ideal no matter which candidates we tend to vote for, no matter which party we tend to associate with. This is a call for all Americans, all true patriots, all that truly love our country to stand for the rule of law. I'll be there on Saturday in Cathedral Square. Mark Pocan's going to be at like four rallies across the state. We'll talk about No Kings more at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned. I've got more headlines coming up. Respect Pentagon journalists walk out today, just a little while ago, thumbing their nose at Department of War Secretary Kegseth. We talk more about that when we come back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. North Carolina already has an F grade from the Princeton Gerrymandering Project for having extremely uncompetitive voting districts. Nonetheless, its state House Speaker announced October 13th the legislature would gerrymander another GOP congressional seat before the 2026 midterms. It's the latest GOP attempt to cling to power in the U.S. House. In a social media post, North Carolina House Speaker Destin Hall said, "We will stand with the president, defend the GOP majority, and secure an additional Republican House seat," unquote, after an agreement was reached between House and Senate leadership, according to North Carolina Newsline. The state has a Democratic governor, and Trump won North Carolina over Harris by a narrow margin, 50.9% to 47.6%. Yet, currently, the GOP holds 10 of 14 of North Carolina's U.S. House seats. But Speaker Hall noted in his post, quote, "POTUS's victory sent a clear message. The voters are with him." GOP efforts in Texas, Missouri, and Utah have been challenged in the courts, but the GOP holds a 5-2 majority in the North Carolina Supreme Court, and its decisions have favored the legislature in recent years. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that federal courts have no role in partisan gerrymandering disputes. Action on a new congressional district map will begin the week of October 20th. We have local reporting linked at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Alba Show.
Don't often agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. They asked her about Congress being shut down and how it related to the Epstein files.
Why drag this out? That is going to have 218 signatures. I say go ahead and do it and get it over with.
Trick me. She's not necessarily my cup of tea, but she reads tea leaves. I think her moving to where she's at says that when that vote happens, there are going to be a major dam break, and it's a problem.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Breaking news: former National Security Advisor John Bolton, as we've been predicting on this program, has now been officially indicted by a federal grand jury in Maryland. The indictment says that Bolton kept more than 1,000 pages of diaries containing highly classified information and may have shared them with two relatives. Apparently, his email account was also hacked by Iran, exposing some of the secrets. I don't know why John Bolton would be responsible for Iran hacking his email, but interesting. All of this pretty fascinating if you think about Keg's breath and the fact that he was zipping war plans around on his signal device to his wife and a couple of buddies that didn't have clearance to receive any of that information. I wonder when that indictment is dropping. Don't you? I mean, inquiring minds here. This is so deeply problematic. It comes merely a day after the fact that Donald Trump announced that he is going to overhaul the IRS to target left-leaning groups, not the billionaires, you know. Not the billionaire, not Elon. I won't look at like Bezos or Zuckerberg. or any of these other mega corporations like Amazon and Google or Peter Thiel, you know, the oligarchs, which you want to look at as left-leaning groups, however that might be defined, you know, those pesky nonprofits that worry about things like affordable housing and making sure people have enough food. Let's go after those folks. Sick the IRS on them. Truly, truly sad. Donald Trump also, if we're talking about weaponization, we've now got the indictment against Jim Comey. We've got the indictment against Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York. We've now got the John Bolton indictment. We expect one of Brennan, former CIA Director Brennan. It's going to go on and on and on. And yesterday, Donald Trump went to great lengths to be sure that he put out the next list of folks that he would like indicted. Maybe he'll send another DM to Pam Bondi, giving her a direct order to indict these people. Listen to Donald Trump, again, say his enemies list out loud. I'm sure Law Barbie Pam Bondi will get right on it. This is not the way that things are supposed to work, folks. Take a listen.
No, I just want people to act. They have to act. And we want to act fast. You know, they were ruthless and vicious. I was impeached twice. I was indicted 5 times. It turned out to be a fake deal. And we have to act fast. One way or the other. One way or the other. They're guilty. They're not guilty. We have to act fast. If they're not guilty, that's fine. If they are guilty or if they should be charged, they should be charged. And we have to do it now.
Act fast, which is basically like saying, Pam, go get the people to indict this list of folks that I'm ticked off about. And I'm not sure if that sound had it, but later in that same cut, he literally lists out Jack Smith, Lisa Monaco, Andrew Weissman, Adam Schiff. These are all people, including Jim Comey, who rightfully and legally investigated a variety of alleged crimes, including who's mishandling of classified documents. Everyone, wait, checks notes. Donald Trump's. You know, the very thing that they're indicting John Bolton for? That's the Mar-a-Lago documents case. The ones that they literally, Donald Trump had been begged to return for over a year and he still wasn't doing it. Yeah, that thing, the ones in the gilded gold bathroom. Now, I want you to listen to this next sound. This is Eric Trump lying about that investigation, doubling down on Donald Trump's weaponization of the DOJ to go after Jack Smith. Listen to this. This is Eric Trump 2 days ago.
Different than that, when they raided Mar-a-Lago. I talk a lot about that in the book because I was the guy that got the call from our teams. Obviously, I run the Trump organization. I got a call. The FBI is at the front gates of Mar-a-Lago. They have a search warrant, sir. And I go, why would they have a search warrant? What are they trying to search at Mar-a-Lago? I don't know, but they're demanding that you instantly turn off every security camera. Obviously, Mar-a-Lago is a commercial property, right? They're demanding you turn off your security cameras right now. And then, you know, sure enough, we find out that Jack Smith is planting manila folders on the office of my father, taking these, you know, glamorous photo shoots where he has them all fanned out like
a
turkey.
Shut this liar up. Shut this liar up. Okay, let's be clear here. There is evidence, both from deposition testimony, as well as other records, that no one from the FBI directed that videotapes be stopped or deleted. No, that was Walt Nauta, the guy that was indicted alongside Donald Trump. Yeah, he's the one that went into their recording room and said, hey, delete this stuff and turn this off. And by the way, Jack Smith couldn't have planted these documents because Jack Smith wasn't hired until November 18th of 2022, and the raid on Mar-a-Lago happened on August 8th. So stop lying, Eric Trump. Stop lying, Donald Trump. I am so sick of it. This is so irresponsible. And where is FCC Chairman Brendan Carr getting super ticked off and threatening to yank FCC licenses because Eric Trump is lying on national news programs? We've got that sound. No, we don't, because it didn't happen. Truly, truly abhorrent. We deserve better. This isn't the way the DOJ was supposed to work, and to every conservative out there, but with Biden, blah, blah, blah. If it was bad then, why is it okay now? Huh? And by the way, those were legit investigations because they didn't conclude who had done crimes first and then try to pin them on them. They followed the facts and the law. There's a difference. When we come back, we'll be joined by Devin Ombrez of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We talk about the Voting Rights Act under attack before the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
For WXCO News, I'm Isabella Nieto. A bill aimed at strengthening penalties against perpetrators of sextortion is heading to the governor's desk. Braden's law stems from the death of a D.C. Everest High School student, Braden Bone, who took his life after being targeted by an organized sexual extortion ring. The legislation establishes sexual extortion as a new crime and imposes severe penalties, including up to a 60-year sentence if the extortion results in the death of the victim. The bill passage comes less than 6 months after it was introduced to the legislature by a handful of legislators in April, including area reps Pat Snyder, Brent Jacobson, and John Spiros, joined by state senators Jesse James and Corey Tomchek in the effort. A spokesperson for Governor Tony Evers told WBAY in Green Bay that the governor intends to sign the legislation. A bill restricting student use of cell phones in Wisconsin's K-12 public schools passed the state Senate. The Senate author, Appleton Republican Rachel Cabral Guevara, says it's a widely supported concept, citing a Marquette poll which found 89% of Wisconsinites support banning cell phone use during classroom instruction time. She said the devices are taking away from kids' learning and lawmakers have been asked to do something about it. The bill requires school boards to enact policies restricting cell phone use during instructional time, with allowances for teachers to okay student use of their cell phones for educational purposes. A survey by the State Department of Public Instruction found most school districts already have policies in place. The bill has already passed the state assembly, and it's unclear if Governor Tony Evers will sign the measure into law. You can find more news anytime at WXCO.FM. I'm Isabella Nieto for WXCO News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Week 42 of the 2025 movie season is at hand and with some nice choices. First up, what do you get when you cross a venture capitalist, a gig worker, and an inept angel? A comedy drama called Good Fortune, starring Keanu Reeves, Seth Rogen, and Aziz Ansari. The film is drawing good reviews so far, and it's nice to see another comedy in the theaters. After the Hunt, starring Julia Roberts, opened in a limited release last week and goes wide this week. Reviews are just so-so for this crime drama. Black Phone 2 hits the big screen to pretty good reviews for this horror film starring Ethan Hawke and Madeline McGraw. The film is pulling roughly the same fresh rating as the first Black Phone at around 80%. Opening in semi-wide release are two dramas. The first is Urchin, starring Fear the Walking Dead alum Frank Delane, who plays an addict living on the streets of London searching for redemption. Truth and Treason is a German historical drama about a teenager in a moral dilemma as he tries to avoid the Gestapo. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and isolated shower or two tonight with lows in the mid-50s. Partly sunny tomorrow, a stray storm could pop up, highs in the low 70s. Temperatures start to fall back for this weekend as we dry out. It's 55 right now.
On Saturday, the Newman Catholic High School football team opens up the playoffs, traveling to Frederick for a Level 1 matchup. Hear all the exciting action live from the Cloverbelt Credit Union broadcast booth on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, starting with the pregame show at 12:35 and the opening kickoff at 1 p.m. Newman Catholic High School football is brought to you by the Newman Catholic Athletic Booster Club, Sun Printing, Wisconsin Valley Flag Football, Rocket Industrial and the Wausau Business Show, and the Cloverbelt Credit Union. It's Newman Catholic at Frederick in an 8-player football WIAA Level 1 playoff. Saturday, live from the Cloverbelt Credit Union broadcast booth, starting with the pregame show at 12:35 p.m. and the opening kickoff at 1 on 98.9 WXCO. Online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the Brewers game from last night, as well as the weekend ahead with Peter Rapine. A week in review, a humorous edition from E-Bomb's World. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. If you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've talked with this next guest before on this program. I always enjoy our chats. He's been very patient to get him back on the Maggie Dawn Show to talk about the beginning of this new Supreme Court term. It kicked off on October 6th, a mere 10 days ago, and there is a massive case that the court will be weighing in on in very short order that may, in effect, gut the central provisions of the Voting Rights Act. When you take this in context with the mid-decade gerrymandering being commandeered by our king, President Donald Trump, it spells portends a very, very dire future, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. So with all of that as prequel, it is my privilege and honor to bring back to the show Devin Ombres. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He has an absolutely stellar resume. I'm not going to read all of it to you fine folks, but suffice it to say, he served as a senior counsel lawyer to Representative Jamie Raskin and helped Representative Raskin managed the portfolio of policy issues that were before the House Judiciary Committee. That was a real boring committee for a whole gamut of years. Of course, I joke. Welcome back to the show, Devin. We've got a lot of action in the Supreme Court this term, and it's starting out with a bang.
It is evergreen, and John Roberts' hatred for the VRA, which has been a through line of his career since he's been with the Reagan administration, is now his life's mission. Is coming to fruition when he has the opportunity to strike down Section 2 of the VRA, the last remaining bastion of the Voting Rights Act that protects minority voters across the country.
So this is this case called Louisiana v. Calais. Tell us what that case is about and how it may, again, render null, void, and no longer enforceable this second section of the Voting Rights Act.
Sure. And I'm sure you've talked to your audience a lot about the mid-decade redistricting.
Yes.
So after every decennial census, the states are supposed to redistrict. And Louisiana got 6 seats, and they drew a new map. And they have about 30% African-American population in the state. They drew one majority-minority district, one black district in the entire state, even though 30% of the population is black. The Fifth Circuit, which is not known for being progressive by any means, said,
I would
y'all
say quite
redraw
the opposite. I would say quite the opposite, right? The Fifth Circuit has been sort of the most Trumpian of circuits.
Yes.
Sorry for the interruption.
No.
The Fifth Circuit even said no good.
The Fifth Circuit said, no, you're violating Section 2 of the VRA. You got to redraw the map. So they redrew and gerrymandered the heck out of it and drew a snake straight through the middle of Louisiana to create a second majority-minority district, a second black district. And they did it in such a way as to protect Speaker Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, a couple other of the white members from down there. And then the people who describe themselves as 3 non-African-American voters, which means white folks, decided that this was a violation of their voting rights, and it was a dilution of their voting rights, and so they challenged it. Court heard argument last year. For whatever reason, they couldn't come to a decision, and they resubmitted it for argument. But this time they said, please tell us whether Section 2 of the VRA violates the 14th and 15th Amendments, which are the Reconstruction Amendments, which were specifically brought into being for the purpose of protecting the newly freed slaves 160 years ago. The purpose of the amendments was to end discrimination against Black people, to provide some form of equality. And so now they're saying, wait, maybe the Voting Rights Act, which was enacted to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments, is unconstitutional some way. It's really just turning the entire history and concept of originalism on its head, despite the fact that six members of the court claim to be originalists.
Yeah, it is truly shocking, as is what I'm going to call this complete inversion. And we see it in case after case, and frankly, in white grievance and fragility after white grievance and fragility, especially from the right. It's like, this is reverse racism. No, it's not. Black people are, minority folks are 30% of the population in the state of Louisiana. They gerrymandered the hell out of it to make sure that Black people only got one out of six seats or their preferred candidates. If it's inverted racial discrimination, what are you getting, like too many seats, like too much power?
It's so much a larger part of this anti-DEI movement that's pushing through the right. There was a case, Fearless Fund, out of the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, where they said that a Black woman-owned venture capital firm couldn't only provide funds to Black woman-owned companies, despite the fact that venture capital funding only goes to less than 2% of Black woman-owned companies. I think something like 90%+ goes to white-owned companies and venture capital firms. So that 2% apparently was discrimination. Same thing last year in Students for Fair Admissions, when they completely ended the concept of racial considerations in collegiate admissions. They said, we're not permitted to look at whether you are, you know, if whether our campuses can kind of mirror the makeup of the nation. They're not allowed to do that. They are completely doing it all in the concept of white people are being discriminated against, because when you've never had to face inequality, equity is persecution.
This is so baffling to me. Like, white and especially white rich people, right, have you are controlling the vast amounts of productive capacity. You take down the vast amounts of wealth in this country. You take up the vast amount of seats in all of our Ivy League universities and colleges. You are the ones that have always had the greatest power, and someone else is saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't let the legacy of that dominating impact be what we have in perpetuity in this country, and that's reverse discrimination.
And that's the kicker of it all, because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were intended and passed to create a level playing field for everybody in the country, regardless of racial makeup. And throughout the South, throughout the Jim Crow, post-Reconstruction era, those were ignored completely. We saw in the 1960s an insurgence of people saying, we need to be treated as human beings. We are men. That's what their signs said. We are men. And there was a huge shift in the way that equality has been advanced over the course of the last 60 years. This is crazy. The law school that I went to had its first Black professor hired in 1990. All right. Yeah. That's an insane thing to me. And I come from the South. So at this point, what they're even doing is they're not even ignoring things. They are shifting the narrative to say that these things that were intended to create equality among all Americans and to end discrimination against minorities were actually supposed to be racially neutral. They were intended to be colorblind, and that is an absolute bastardization of every historical tenet that we know about the Civil War.
Yeah, again, all of these originalists are ignoring the precise purpose of this. It wasn't to create a faux concept of equality that only exists under the law. that has no relationship to the actual reality of how opportunities, access, wealth, power, influence are distributed here on Earth One.
I mean, on a similar bent, we can talk about originalism in the context of creating a kingly presidency by this Supreme Court in Trump the U.S. when they said presidents are indeed above the law. Apparently none of them have ever read the Declaration of Independence, which has the litany of abuses that we revolted against King George for. And Donald Trump has been speed running those abuses in the last 9
it's
months.
It's like he's got a punch list. Check.
Kicking them all off, you know, and we're coming real close to violations of the Third Amendment with you can't be forced to quarter soldiers in homes. So they're not making us, you know, living in D.C. There are some, I actually feel bad for these guys because they're away from their families and their work and everything. And and there's guys in battle rattle guarding the Mike's, the Jersey Mike's sub shop that I go to a couple times a week. And I always ask them, like, are they going to let you guys go home anytime soon? And they're like, we don't know. And they're not happy.
No,
they're not happy. They don't want to be doing this. But because we're living in a war zone in a city that I've lived in for 15 years and have never seen a crime occur, that's just the altered reality that we live in. I like that you call that Earth One.
Yeah, Earth One. You know, President Johnson said once something along the lines of, if you can convince the white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice that you're picking his pocket. And so much that the distractionary nonsense around the anti-woke, which is like you are against the diversity that makes our country strong, you're against the equity that enables us to continue to be a superpower, and you're against the inclusion that we fought the Civil War to enshrine in a system of laws. That's what anti-wokeism is. And it occurs to me, as we've seen the Supreme Court consistently turn away from originalism when convenient, there is no through line that you can discern that is theoretically, from a legal analysis approach, consistent from case to case. It stands out in sharp relief when we look at whether we're talking about Fearless Fund, right, and the fact that despite the reality of venture capital money flowing almost exclusively, except for a razor thin amount, infinitesimally small percentages to black women, ignoring that reality and saying a black female run venture fund, which is private, by the way, she can't decide to exclusively fund other black female led startups. The Voting Rights Act case, which is now going to say that somehow white people deserve to have an over distribution of congressional seats, and the Harvard SFFA case, right, that says, no, we can't consider race amongst a collection of factors to ensure that our students have an Earth One experience that is reflective of the American population. And yet, when this very same Supreme Court looked at the removing of rights, not the conferral of a benefit through venture capital, right, through college admissions, through voting access, that conference of a benefit or this affirming of rights of historically disadvantaged and, you know, a population of people that were enslaved by white people, as soon as it comes to stripping away rights and taking people's, then they said in the Alien Enemies Act case, yeah, you can absolutely look at race as a number of factors, which all are basically pretexts for race. So they're saying, yes, you can racially discriminate to strip people of their Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, but you certainly can't do that to ensure that they have equal voting rights, access to capital, or education.
No. No, I want to add two things that you said.
I want you to hold those two things, Devin. Okay. We've got to squeeze in a little of a few messages. It's going to be a really, really quick segue here, folks. Stay with us. We got Devin Ombres of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the Supreme Court's new term and basically the wholesale endorsement of the attack on black folks by the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Transform your bathroom with the beautiful quality of Bath Planet. Bath Planet has earned the Good Housekeeping Seal, a symbol of quality and consumer confidence for over 100 years. And right now, for a limited time, you can upgrade your bathroom for 50% off installation or choose 18 months with no interest and no payments. But you need to call now. This special offer is only available by calling 800-329-4115. That's 800-329-4115. Call 800-329-4115 right now before the offer ends.
Are National Guard troops generally trained in law enforcement? No. National Guard troops like those President Donald Trump deployed to American cities in recent months to crack down on crime are not generally trained in law enforcement. For example, police officers in Washington, D.C. receive 21 training modules in criminal procedure, but Guard members receive none. Their primary training is focused on crowd control. Milwaukee's police union president suggested troops should be sent to Wisconsin's largest city. Governor Tony Evers called National Guard troops the, quote, wrong people, unquote, for fighting crime. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Are you passionate about local high school sports? So are we. WXCO 98.9 FM is proud to be the only station in Wausau bringing you live, play-by-play coverage of high school sports, game after game, season after season. But we can't do it alone. We are currently seeking local sponsors and community partners who believe in the power of sports to bring people together, inspire youth, and energize our hometown pride. Promote your business, support our local athletes, be heard by thousands of loyal local listeners. If your business is interested in supporting live sports broadcasts while gaining valuable exposure, now is the perfect time to become a WXCO sports sponsor. Message us on our Facebook page or call or text our sales rep, Aaliyah, at 608-573-1597. That's 608-573-1597. Let's keep Wausau High School sports on the air together.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great guest with us. I always have a blast when I get to talk with him. His name is Devin Ombrez. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the beginning of the Supreme Court's term. It started on October 6th, specifically the case Louisiana v. Calais, where the Supreme Court seems poised to void Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. This is yet another in a long now line of Supreme Court decisions under John Roberts where laws that were created in the Reconstruction or post-Reconstruction period following the Civil War to try to protect the rights of Black folks here in this country, this Supreme Court now seems especially hostile to. Right before we took a break, I mentioned to Devin the fact that if we look at the affirmative action college admissions case, if we look at the venture capital fearless fund case, if we look now at the voting rights case, what you see is the Supreme Court inverting reality, ignoring it completely, and saying these laws that were designed to ensure that Black folks had full participatory rights in our democracy, in our capitalistic system, these things that can maybe could be considered as conferring a benefit, those you we no. But black folks, there's reverse racism now, and this just can't happen. But just a month and a half ago, this Supreme Court said, of course you consider race when you're stripping rights away from people. That's perfectly acceptable. You cannot make these things work together, ladies and gentlemen. You can't. And I'll also say this. When you're talking about stripping rights away, you're talking about some of the most fundamental constitutional rights in this democratic republic. There should be a higher standard for stripping them away. And yet again, Roberts et al., not really digging on that. It's simply so inconsistent to shock the conscience if you're paying attention. Devin, you had a couple of thoughts.
One would think so. I did have a couple of thoughts. I think that you asked, is there a through line? And I think the through line is that it is all part of a piece of the anti-wokeness that is roiling the country, which I consider very anti-Christian. Like, yes. Anti-wokeness is anti-Christian. And you see folks on the right saying empathy and sympathy and caring for your fellow man is indeed a sin that you should not engage in, which, if I recall my Sunday school and CCD lessons, is the opposite of the gospel. But that's just me. You asked if there's a through line. There is a through line throughout all of it. It is a will to power and a willingness to let this administration get away with whatever they want. Black people can't have voting rights protections, but ICE and Homeland Security are permitted to engage in racial profiling. And we got rid of racial profiling about 60-ish years ago through a series of civil rights cases where the Supreme Court couldn't disallow that. And so what they're doing is overturning precedent left and right. And Thomas said last week or 2 weeks ago at a speech at the Catholic University, I'm not going to consider stare decisis. If I think that the issue is stupid, I'm just going to vote to overturn it, which is not how stare decisis has ever worked. Stare decisis meaning guiding light. We will follow this. If a prior court has said it, we're not going to overturn it unless facts and circumstances have substantially changed on the ground. And they have not. And here's the thing that to pull out.
And they have not. That's such a key point, Devin. Earth one. The circumstances have not. It's like they wave a magic wand in their big marble building in Washington, D.C. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's no disparities. There's no nothing to see here.
So when John Roberts in Shelby County versus Holder 10 years ago, when he struck down Section 4 of the VRA, which got rid of preclearance, he said the only way to stop being racially motivated is to stop being racially motivated. So let's just not have any enforcement mechanisms and trust on the goodwill of humanity to not engage in racially motivated actions. And as soon as they struck that down, you saw states pass hundreds of laws that significantly stripped voting power away from minority communities. And what you're going to see, and the thing that really concerns me about Calais versus or Louisiana versus Calais, is when this opinion comes down, because if it comes down in January, you are going to see every state in the South completely re-gerrymander their districts and get rid of basically the entirety of the Black caucus. They are going to redistrict 19 seats, which will make it a probable impossibility for people of color to gain seats, for anything to change. And they're going to continue this gerrymandering crusade they've been on for decades at this point, where it's not constituents who get to pick their members. It is members who get to pick their constituents. And that is not a representative democracy. It's not.
Yeah, John Roberts, and this has been repeated in various cases, including SFFA versus Harvard, we have to get rid of racism by not talking about race. That is the equivalent of white people saying, I don't see race. That is garbage. It is utter garbage. We deal with disparate outcomes. We deal with the historical impacts of enslaving people. We deal with that by talking about race, with dealing with the actual realities of folks. And this concept that white people presumptively get all this stuff and anything that tries to rebalance or provide more equal access and equal opportunity despite centuries of legally enshrined racism is so asinine that it could only come from, let me see here, Alito, Rob. I mean, with the exception of Clarence Thomas, It has always been a group of old white dudes from Ivy League backgrounds. It's like, they don't live on Earth One with the rest of us.
We've only had women on the Supreme Court since the 1980s. Sandra Day O'Connor was the first.
Yes.
We've had five in the entire 250-year history of the U.S. I guess six. I'm not counting Barrett, but six. Yeah. We've only had six women on the Supreme Court in 250 years. It's nuts.
Again, Earth One, reality, folks, it should matter to our courts. We're going to have to say goodbye to Devin. Thank you so much to Devin Umbres, the Director of Courts and Legal Policy for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He'll be back really soon, especially given all that is happening in our court system. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Liam Kent. He's one of the national partners for No King's Day. We're going to talk about the ridiculous...
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. A grand jury in Maryland has indicted President Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton. The 26-page indictment includes 8 counts of transmission of national defense information and 10 counts of retention. This comes after a search of Bolton's home and office in August. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
When that search of John Bolton's home in Maryland and his office in D.C. was executed, the feds seized some things. They took phones, computer devices, and a series of records with markings that said confidential.
CBS's Nicole Skanga says the indictment alleges in 2018 and 2019, he sent diary-like entries to two individuals.
At no point did he have the authorization to store or transmit the classified information that he sent to these two individuals, or even to store them.
Legal analyst Laurie Levinson.
It's a similar charge to what was brought against President Trump, and of course, he said that that was not a violation of the law.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Cammie McCormick.